No! This is In Psychom. My name is Shruti.
I'm Navneet.
And I'm Abhishek.
And today we're going to talk about...
This is the season-ending review of the Susong of Psychom episodes that Shruti has been doing.
That's right.
Correct.
So we thought now that the season is ending and Shruti is...
No! Season is not ending! Season is done!
Season is done and Shruti is taking a break.
Yes! For the summer.
Yes. But we still solicit everyone to come forward and talk to us about more recordings that they want to do because, yeah.
I'm only stopping to work on them. I'm not stopping to record them.
Right.
So, we, of course, Shruti would like to hear from more of you and from as varied backgrounds as possible.
Yeah. Definitely. So, she can start season two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, we thought we would do like a season end review, and we would talk about, you know, stuff that we found was interesting. Everybody who featured on the podcast, as well as those who wrote in instead of coming on a podcast, and also, you know, what are the stuff that we got to learn about, things that we had never heard about.
That's true. I got to learn about a lot
of things. So many interesting things.
Yes.
So, in total, Shruti, you did about 12 podcasts.
Yes.
And there were two people, Prateek and Vivek, who wrote in.
Yes. And they gave me the much-needed break to not in between, where I was like, okay, I'm just tired of making podcasts now. Yes. Can I take a two-week break? Yes. And they were my saviors. And all I had to do was just hit publish on the blog and it was right there.
Shruti's alternative nighttime profession of audio ninja.
Yeah. So you found a new profession in case you want to make the switch.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, science is not always a given. It's not always 100%. Who knows if I'm going to become a professor. But hey, I have really serious podcasting skills now.
She'll have a super visiting card saying, Shruti Muralidhar, audio ninja for hire.
Podcast ninja.
Podcast ninja for hire.
I will make you sound awesome in a podcast.
Yes.
Okay, so let's start this off with talking about how did this idea first come to you? You know, like, when did you think that this would be something that you wanted to do?
So,
what did you gain from it?
Yeah, why do you do it, Shruti? Why do you do this strange thing?
Why do we do what we do anyway? What are the reasons? But no, one of the nice things was I was talking to Sakshi Rana, who actually is also part of our Slack community. And she had this really nice idea where she said, you know, there are so many people who do Psychom in India nowadays. And she wants to sort of go, she wanted to go and interview each of them and sort of ask really in-depth questions, talk about what got them into Psychom in the first place, why they're doing what they're doing. Of course, this list was very exhaustive and it included science journalists,
it was a very in-depth sort of interview, but it was focused on professionals who were doing science communication.
Right. And when I was talking to her, I realized that this could be repackaged into a much smaller format and be made more widely applicable to people who weren't doing Psychom for a living, just people who are interested in doing Psychom or people who are doing Psychom in their own tiny way.
Yeah, scientists.
Yeah, and like students or people who are learning or, you know, people who are in varied fields or people who want to get into Psychom, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that combined with around the time where we realized that we were asking people to write 1,000 words for our blog. And that simply wasn't working out because we were pursuing a lot of people. We were trying to get them to write, but nobody has their time to write because if you have to write, you have to read, you have to edit.
Writing is hard, as we've all found out one way or another. It's difficult when you suddenly have to pull out 1,000 words out of the air and have it professionally written and edited and still easy enough to read for the lay public so you can put it out on our blog.
Exactly.
So, it's hard.
So it was a combination of Sakshi's idea plus my idea of going, hey, why can't we do this in an easier way? Wouldn't it just be easier if we talked to somebody and I could record that conversation and make a podcast out of it?
Yeah. And go directly to the source.
Right.
Go to the scientists or go to the students who are actually doing science.
Yeah, I was totally not ready to like make a full podcast out of it because I felt like even though it's a conversation, it might not have like the force or the drive to keep going for a 1 hour podcast or a 45 minute podcast. Mm-hmm. And that's where this 15-minute format came into my mind. And I was like, okay, if I can ask them 3 questions and they can answer 5 minutes each of these questions. This kind of sort of push people to say, okay, I'm going to answer questions about myself. I'm going to be brief and I'm going to talk about a scientific concept that's going to be really cool. And that's the reason why I worded the question three the way I worded it. I wanted it to be a scientific concept that would appeal to younger people, that would want sort of, you know, that would make younger people to say, hey, that's a really cool idea. That's something I didn't think about. And you look at the field in a really different way.
Yeah, it's like a one-hour podcast is a full course dinner. And our Susan of SciComm is a tasting menu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like that.
That's very well put.
For people who haven't heard it before, please go sample our tasting menu online.
Exactly. And you have a wide, variety of dishes to choose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We cater to every format and every taste.
I hope it's not. I hope it doesn't fill you up, though.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. So, so what did you think? Like, what were the major themes? Like, how did everybody get into SciComm? Like, did they have somebody push them into it? Was it of their own volition?
In general, how did they get where they were?
So one of the major themes of this was the second question. So how did you get where you are right now? It was my second question that I asked almost everybody. A lot of times. A lot of people, the way they answered it was, they say, okay, I'm doing this. I'm a student. I'm a PhD student. I'm a postdoc. I'm right now in this academic or scientific career. But what got me there was an aha moment. I'm paraphrasing, of course. Very few people said aha moment. But for a lot of people, it was like something life-changing, something that changed the way they think about what they were doing, something that, they were doing, I don't know, pre-med, and then suddenly just like an idea came to them and turned them around to do entirely something else, like ecology or evolution or something like that.
Yeah, that one moment of bright nostalgia that they could go back and mine every time their lab experiments were getting way too difficult.
Right? It's the thing that keeps you going, actually. Yeah. But no, it was different things for different people. So this aha moment took the form of different inspiration points. So for somebody, it was really supportive professor or a teacher who came up at the right time, who gave the right advice and who talked to them about alternative paths. For a lot of people, it was just simply volunteering opportunities. Like, Vaishali, for example, talked about how she volunteered and she realized, okay, I mean, ecology and conservation was something that she really wanted to do. Could have even been a book. Manan talks about how Richard Dawkins's book came at really the right place at the right time. And it really propelled him into studying ecology and evolution.
Yeah. So there's actually, there might be something in there for people. Like if going forward, our science bodies and our educational bodies wanted to devise a way to get more people interested, and there are some learnings from that.
Right.
You need to have these teachers who encourage students at the right time
careers. Exactly.
But also you need to feed them with, the right kind of extracurricular activities or make them read books and
People seem to want something special that is personally relevant to them, but which they haven't heard before, and they hold on to that and they work towards a science or a profession that will let them do that often enough.
It's not something that can be. It's a very personalized thing, so different things work for different people.
Exactly,
and in fact, if people want to listen to the very first podcast that we made, which was about us, then we talk about our aha moments as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's along the same lines that it's either a teacher or a book or something like that.
Yeah, you can't bottle inspiration, but you can think about how other people have reached where they are and try and see if that works for you or not.
I thought the other sort of common thing was that even though it was like some places it was a professor, some was a course, some was a book, it was something that every interviewee that I talked to, every one of them had reached it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that was like part of a course. It wasn't something that was designed. It wasn't something that they planned for to happen.
Right.
It was something that they discovered and they found and they sort of took that extra step and they did it on their own. So I guess having that freedom to go out of the plan to do something that's not part of what you're supposed to do also is really important.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so so let's get into let's discuss a little bit more about the different podcasts. So when people do see the lists and if they go through it, they will find that there is an abundance of ecologists who appear.
Go ecology. We support earth science and all
for
that
sure,
stuff.
We do.
Which is a great thing, but was that in the design or did it just
not even remotely close. It's just since I didn't have a set list of people that I was going to interview and the list was evolving as I was interviewing people, I just happened to sort of tap into this completely nodal, untapped sort of network of ecologists who one person I talked to and they by the end of the interview they're like, oh, you know what, I know somebody else you should talk to, and another person, and I think I got through about 5 or 6 people like this. And out of all the episodes, a lot of them are related to ecology, to conservation, to evolution, to geography, to huge citizen science projects. So it wasn't at all pre-planned.
It's like a fairy tale, a Grimm's fairy tale, where a desperate protagonist searches for something cool and finds it actually, and we found it.
That was really nice to see that people were.
I was really, it was really fun talking to them also, and that was another thing that I thought was cool was that all of these people love talking about their work. Like they have such outgoing personalities and they're so interested in telling other people about what they do. It was really cool. I mean, that enthusiasm really comes through in the podcast, and I hope I have done justice to them and I've done justice to that enthusiasm in the podcast.
Do you think it's also because, I mean, so when these guys describe their work, they do it in a certain way, and generally people watch National Geographic videos or videos of environment. Everybody's heard about David Attenborough and seen some of his work.
Right.
So there is this connect that the people already have with ecology and with animals and
His latest Planet Earth series has been sensational.
So do you think that going from there, does it make it easier for ecologists to explain the work? Because there is no abstract nature of their work, as in with trying to explain what the boson is or trying to explain how different neurons work in the brain or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, that was something that I did find more often with ecologists. I mean, people who explain bird migrations, people who explain elephant movements, or people who explain, changes in forest cover, for example. These are all things that you can like walk outside and see. Like you can go to a zoo and see elephants. You can walk outside and see tree cover. So I thought it was easier for ecologists to explain a lot of what they do because it's something that we all can see. It's very observational. It's like easily palpable and very easily identifiable. As opposed to, say, somebody who's talking about DNAs or proteins or nucleic acids or, molecular microscopic things that you need special implements or you need to go to a special place to see all of these things that you usually cannot see. I think that's like definitely one of the positive points that ecologists have on their side, in their pocket, in their kitty, because it's so easy for them to reach out to people because it's like wildlife and conservation is such a common theme and everybody identifies with some aspect of it at some point. But that doesn't
there's also more in popular understanding. There's a lot more going on about climate research, about how it's harming the environment.
It's a beautiful accident, but it's happened just at the right time. We need people to speak up about the environment and conservation and ecology and all those important things.
But that doesn't mean molecular biologists are bad at explaining about things about do. I just feel, you can make DNA interesting. You can make proteins interesting. I would love to make neurons interesting. I mean, I know Navneet and I would love to make neurons in glia interesting, but it's you got to go about it in a different way than how ecologists do it. At least that's what I would feel.
Yeah, it's just more remote from normal human experience, so you have to put a little bit more extra effort to explain those things.
Yeah, I mean, also, I was thinking about this, that unlike in India, in the West, especially, you know, in Europe and in the US, science communicators have really taken the idea of DNA and of genetics and genetic material, and they have really done lots of amazing, incredible work to spread the idea of genetics and what is DNA. I mean, DNA by itself is a very abstract concept, but it's reached a stage where people identify with that word and they know how to use it in a sentence and they know loosely what it means. Whereas I don't think that sufficient amount of work has happened in India. So some of these concepts are still hard to describe in layman's terms,
sort of like a normal person who doesn't know that much science.
Yeah,
right?
Gene is a pop culture term rather than a scientific term these days. So,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Do you want to give examples of how people went about
explaining certain concepts and so on?
Did you find something interesting?
Yeah.
Oh, the one I found really interesting was the cone snails that hunt. Most definitely. Of course, I have a previous connection to the topic, so I will find it interesting. But one of our friends, Srinivasan Raghuraman, talked about cone snails and. Of course, he talks about this in great detail in the podcast, and you should listen. But for lack of time, what he basically talks about are cone snails, which usually when you think about it, if you think about snails, they're these, you know, sad little things that are crawling around in their own mucus in our garden. And it's not easy to think about them as hunters and predators, but they are. Right. And believe me, see some of the videos, you'll start getting nightmares about cone snails that hunt. There are even vampire cone snails that suck the blood of other fishes and snails that put out huge nets. Their mouth opens up into a net and it swallows whole schools of fish that they first anesthetized and put into a coma using, you know, special toxin molecule groups.
Yeah. You will have links of these things below in case anybody wants to read.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
This was
really cool because it relied on the element of surprise. People didn't know, like, I'm pretty sure people don't know that cone snails hunt. I mean, it's not something that, you know, a normal person like walking on the street would know.
Yeah, you think snails graze on leaves, but these are marine cone snails. They're underwater snails.
So this was like a perfect example of an episode that relied solely on the element of surprise. I liked Anusha Shankar's episode on hummingbirds and energy budgets, because that is something that you don't think about. Like, it's not surprising, but at the same time, it's like another level of question that you usually... that doesn't come to the forefront of thought. Because you think about hummingbirds and you're like, hey, they're birds and they move really fast and they have to keep eating because otherwise they run out of energy. But like, you never think about, so what do they do when they go to sleep?
Right.
You know, I mean, do they, ideally, if you just extend this analogy, they must just die, like, you know, when they go to sleep because they don't eat and they just stop metabolizing anything. But the fact that you have these hummingbirds that go into like an altered version of hibernation, and they sort of, that's how they conserve energy in the night, and then they wake up every morning and then they restart their metabolism again. So this is like another example of how it's not surprising, but it's just something that you don't think about.
Yeah. Like how people didn't think about putting NutraSweet in bird feeders when trying to feed hummingbirds and found out, of course, you know, they can't survive because they need so much nutrition. You can't try to make them diet.
They need actual sugar. They're not going for
the not going for the fake kinds of sugar.
Local,
And then what else?
I mean, I really liked, I had two favorite ones. One was Parshati Patel's podcast, the very first one, in fact, which was about how planets are formed from the existing gases of clouds and what happens when these die out and when stars die out and they give out their gases and stuff. That was really cool to know. And I think she did a really good job explaining it.
Yeah.
And the other one I really liked was Rima's podcast about human emotions and the universality. Certain emotions. That was really nice because it cut across both neurobiology, neuroscience, as well as, cultural psychology.
Right.
Yeah. So I really like those two ones.
No, and Reema also did a great job. I mean, she went from like really specific things about what she does to explaining again how, you know, there are things that are common for all of us. And yeah, again, this wasn't an element of surprise episode. Mm-hmm. It was again something that said, hey, this is something that you probably haven't noticed before.
Yeah, it's a thing that's ever present and it's so common that you stop noticing it.
Yeah.
So this was very similar to Ramesh Longani's podcast also about resource allocation. He was talking about how, you know, in different kinds of soils, plants can grow their roots differently. Mm-hmm. They change and they allocate more root space and grow huge roots or grow lesser roots when they have to dig more for nutrients. And it's just like that. It's how you know you change suddenly.
Yeah. And I mean, depending on the environment.
Depending on the environment, you're suddenly different now. Yeah. But you're still similar. But there are changes that you do so that you can adapt and remain productive in a different environment.
And the fact that an organism that is completely non-motile, like a plant, has to make all of these really intense decisions about how much energy it's getting and where it's supposed to put that energy, depending on what is in its environment. It's like it's a pretty cool system.
Yeah, it's different from a human being, right? I'm waiting in my house and I'm hungry and I say, oh, I'm really hungry. There is a deficit of energy in my current environment. So I need to walk over to that restaurant and grab a burger, right? But a plant can't do that. All it can do is, oh, there's a limited amount of food in my environment. I'm going to grow way more roots and dig really deep in here and get everything that's possible.
Right.
Yeah. It's just it changes the way you see the world around you.
Yeah.
That's what we're really happy about this podcast series. We'd like to thank every single one of the people who contributed their understanding, their knowledge and their perspective on the world and on science. Mm-hmm. Because even though we are scientists ourselves, science is so huge.
Yeah.
So huge. And there are so many different...
And it's impossible to like know everything. I mean, I can be... Yeah, Navneet and I are neuroscientists and we only still can claim to know so much about the brain. But like, Navneet, think about the things that we don't know about.
Yeah.
You know,
I had no clue about so many things before I heard.
Right? I was like, I think when Chintan talked about geographic information systems, and I remember audibly gasping because he said, you know what, you can fly to Mars, like just sitting in your couch. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, my jaw just dropped. I mean, I know I can't record like a jaw drop on my mic, but my jaw dropped. You know, I was like, is that, I didn't even know that was possible. So, you know, things like this that we didn't know at all, like other scientists don't know anything about. So I think it's like a really special form of SciComm.
Yeah.
They all did a great job.
Right? Devyani Khare's stuff.
They usually communicate their work anyway.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Through other means. And, you know, it's either whatever, through social media or talking to people. But this is, I think, maybe getting a more popular platform now.
Yeah.
Where people listen to these short podcasts on the way to work or when they are in the middle of a break.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very egalitarian. And it the spread of this communication to people who we want to hear science, that's what it increases. Like Devyani Khare's stuff about citizen science.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can do science now. You don't have to be a full-time scientist to do science.
Yeah, she was really good at explaining that too, about how you don't have to be somebody with a master's or a PhD to actually say, hey, this is my contribution to science. Like, you can go out today and ID birds and ID leaves and ID trees and say, this is what I found in my environment.
Yeah, our world is changing, right?
Yeah.
So you have to keep track of it. A lot of science is observation, which anybody can do.
Exactly.
So we did provide them with an alternative outlet for their
That is correct. Yeah, a lot of the people I interviewed already do some form of SciComm. Like, for example, I met them through Twitter, so they were already talking about their science on Twitter. They use like regular media outlets, like they write for magazines, they write for newspapers. Chintan had already written a couple of articles for newspapers. Anusha Shankar is a National Geographic fellow. So she's like given talks. She does workshops. Mm-hmm. She does a whole bunch of things. I mean, they've used everything from social media to writing to just good old fashioned outreach where you go out and talk to people about science.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hope...
It's very... Yeah, it's very heartening to see people taking time out, because as scientists, we know that it takes a hell of a lot of time.
Yes.
Doing science in the lab, but being and like you, you know, being able to take time out to record these podcasts and edit these podcasts.
Yes, exactly.
But also people taking the time to go out and tell other people about the cool stuff that they are doing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it really speaks to like their interest and their passion. Mm-hmm. In for science and how much they want to do and how much they want to put in, and it's really encouraging more than anything else. Yeah,
science is not just for scientists, it's for everyone.
Yeah,
it's like how Vivek Nityananda's 3D vision and praying mantis just blew up on the net,
right? Everywhere. Yeah, I was so surprised when we actually got him. Navneet, seriously, I was like, no way he's gonna reply to us, because he's done like a bajillion interviews already.
Yeah.
On praying mantises that wear glasses. But he was so sweet. He actually, I mean, granted, he didn't have time to talk to us, but he was so nice. He actually replied to us, and we had a text upload where he answered all our questions. It was really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool.
So okay. Apart from ecologists, we also had a few other subjects represented, of
course.
Right? As Navneet mentioned, Parshati Patel talked about planetary formation.
Right.
We had Arnab Dasgupta talk about cosmology,
yes.
About the very fabric of space-time.
Yeah.
And we also had...
Well, we spoke about... we already spoke about Srini hunting cone snails.
Yeah.
We spoke about Reva, which Navneet really liked.
Deepta Vasudevan talked about neurogenesis in
which is very cool. She had a really nice analogy that I thought was very interesting. She talked about neurons as sort of the electrical system in the house, which is, I thought, like a really cute analogy that I hadn't thought about before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, and Ramesh is actually, even though Ramesh spoke about ecology, he's actually a plant biologist,
mm-hmm.
because he studies plants in like such great detail.
Yeah,
all these people have been really amazing. So thank you to everybody once again. I know I thank all of them individually at the end of podcasts and at the end of my calls, but thank you once again for taking time. And it's been wonderful. And I really hope to keep continuing this and putting out as many episodes as possible.
It's been a great season.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's even led to branch outs, right? Navneet has a new effort in the works, right? Would you like to tell us something about that, Navneet?
So it's very preliminary. I did one recording with Dr. Kolegal Sharma, who is doing remarkable work trying to spread more awareness about science and publications that come out in scientific journals, but in Kannada.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And he does this, you know, in a no-frills manner, trying to put out these podcasts using WhatsApp, which... according to the estimate that he gave me, he says goes out to at least 1,000 people.
Wow!
So that's a big number. It's not an easy number to achieve.
For sure. It took us 1 year to get 1,000 followers on Twitter. I mean, what he's doing is fantastic.
Yeah, and it goes to people of all professions and all hues of life, which is really nice to see. And so that was the only podcast that I've done. I'm trying to find another person.
But it's just opened up this venue of talking about science in local languages, right?
Which exactly. I mean, that's a big, I think, untapped area that people don't talk about.
Yeah.
That if, especially in India, it's even more, important, because a lot of the education does not happen in English as a medium of instruction.
Right.
Yeah, and we have how many local languages? A hojillion of them?
No.
Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah.
18 official, am I right?
22 according to the constitution.
Okay.
But
and how many other dialects? And
So it reaches some thousands of numbers. So it's actually pretty crazy. So okay, and we've got so even though this season's ended, but Shruti still has a list for the next season.
Yes, I already have a bunch of people lined up.
Yeah. But we would love for more people to approach us.
Yes, please. I'm always on the lookout for new people. I swear it doesn't take more than 20 minutes of your time. I know everybody is super busy, and I know everybody is like has no time because they're doing all amazing science. But but just a weekend, just 20 minutes, one Skype call is all I need. And I promise, again, I keep saying this to everybody, I promise I'll make you sound amazing. I've learned a lot.
We will inject a new enthusiasm for your own subject into your life and into the lives of other people.
Yeah. That is the plan.
Okay, so yeah, we are hoping for great things in season 2 as
that's
well.
Right.
And
that's
where we will end this episode.
Cool. Thank you very much. And again,
thank you all for listening.
Yeah, thank you. And we are all in SciComm, and this is us signing out.